Good evening. Have you ever met someone who just seemed miserable all the time? That person who is not really a bad person, but they simply seem to be in a bad mood no matter what is happening. Sometimes there are those people that have a chip on their shoulder perpetually, and you just can't seem to understand why or figure out why. Look for the negative in every situation. You go and talk to them, and they can't seem to find anything but negative things to say about everything. I've known people in my lifetime who seem to have it all together, yet they are miserable, and worse yet, they seem to cause other people to be miserable and then feed on that misery. They seem to be not happy unless others are unhappy as well. So they have this attitude, things are not going right for me, so I want to make sure that they don't go right for anyone else either. I want to make everybody's day miserable. I refuse to become their victim. In fact, the best thing that you could do to a person like that is to shower them with kindness, or shower them with love, overwhelm them with compassion and kindness and love. Most people I know who are miserable and negative really have no reason to be that way. In fact, they usually have been, most of the people I notice have been blessed, and they ought to be the most humble people on the planet, but that's not the case. Why do you suppose that is? Why are some people miserable no matter what happens to them? They just seem to be, despite having the Midas touch, so to speak, they are always miserable. And what reason in the world could these people possibly have for being miserable all the time, or being negative all the time? I've wondered why they would be like this, and then it hit me. I look up at 1 John. If you look at 1 John chapter 4, verse 7 and 8, 1 John chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, it said, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love." Without a love for God, our lives would be miserable. And perhaps that is why there are so many miserable people in this world, because they lack a love for God. These people often practice a form of religion. However, their religion is empty and vain. Perhaps they don't even realize this. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 9. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 9. "He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness even until now." Anyone who knows someone like this would not only say that they don't love their fellow man, but would likely say they don't love anyone. We've met people like this, and I think he hates everybody. Where do we stand as a congregation when it comes to love? Where do we stand as individuals? I look up that word love, and I've seen several different definitions of it over the years, and different views of what love is. One of the best definitions I ever had of love was in the footnotes of one of my study Bibles. It said, "Love is the sacrificial giving of oneself to another without the expectation of receiving anything in return." And that seems to me like a good definition of love. But when we think about love, how are we? Are we loving? Because when in our language, in the English language, the word love can cover a whole lot of things, really a whole lot of things. I know that Tyler loves duck hunting, and he loves Alyssa. So, yeah, she's, I don't know. There's something there, right? But we look at that in the Greek. The word love, there's different words for love. So we have one word for love. If you love duck hunting, or if you love your spouse, it's the same word. It's love. But in the Greek, there's different words for the word love. Some is brotherly love. Some is a compassionate love, and things like that. And so we think about that. We wonder where do we stand as a congregation when it comes to love? Love is just a generic word to us, pretty much in this country. Do we love one another? In John chapter 13 and verse 34, Jesus said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, as I have loved you, that ye also love one another." Love one another. Love one another. Over, he just keeps, why did he say that? Is this really a new commandment? As early as Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18, it says, "Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord." So I'm not trying to question Jesus as to whether when he says a new commandment, wait a minute, this seems like an old commandment. A certain lifestyle is presented to the Israelites here in how they should live. However, they were never commanded to love all men. This is how they were commanded to love each other or to be around each other. Jesus gives us command that we love one another. When you look at the religious practices of this country and of the world, I can't help but be moved with compassion over the multitudes who sincerely desire to serve God. In fact, if you were asked the majority of the religious groups right here in this country, what do you expect to gain by being in worship service? What do you expect to gain from that? Most likely they would answer you and say, well, I just want to serve God to the greatest capacity possible. I just want to be obedient to my master. I want to be obedient to God. I truly believe that just as the majority of the religious people in this country desire to serve God, I also believe that the majority of people in general simply want to be loved. That's a thing that most people overlook. I just want to be loved. And there's people that are lonely. There's people that are just bitter. And part of the bitterness is because they just don't feel loved. And as Christians, we're supposed to make people feel loved whenever they come around. I know that people come into this congregation and automatically they say, something's different here. We y'all have a compassion, a love for people that we really miss. And that's a great thing. So when I ask the question, where do we stand as a congregation when it comes to love, I believe that we do really, really well in this congregation. We have to be careful, though, because as individuals, oftentimes we may look at someone and say, yeah, I really like them, but I just don't love them. It's really difficult to love that person. He's got an abrasive personality. Perhaps it is because he hasn't been shown the love that he should or she should or whatever. How hard is it to love one another? Some people are harder to love than others. I know that. I realize that. Personality differences make it difficult. Sometimes we have personality clashes, and I just don't have anything in common with that person. It makes it difficult. Trust issues. Sometimes there are trust issues that people have, so they make it harder for them for you to love them because they don't want to let anybody in. They keep up a force field, so to speak. Because of trust issues, and so we're supposed to love one another. Reality is, it's a very simple command to love one another, especially when compared to some of the other commandments in the New Testament. Do we make it hard for people to love us? Have you ever seen one of those people that rushes into save someone or rushes into a burning building? I know we see first responders and stuff like that, but you see these highlights on the news and stuff. Today, a great story of a young high school kid who rushed into a fire and pulled a family of three out, saving their lives. And when they ask him, why would you do this? And they say something like, well, I just did what anybody else would do. Their attitude is, I didn't even think about it. I just did what anybody else would do. That's what you would do. You see a kid run out in front of a car, you don't say, ain't my kid, but he's fixing to be roadkill. We rush out there, no matter who, we rush out there, we want to pull that kid away, we want to save that kid. It's human nature. But when you look at this, it means that not only do we inherently want to do good to others and to love and to be loved deep down inside, we would like to think that the whole world is that way. We would like to think that the world thinks like we do, that we want to love and we want to be loved. And in this country, we really do. But when we look at other countries, we think, they really hate us? They really hate us that bad? They just hate us for being us? How can that be? Now, they don't have a love for God like we have a love for God. They have a love for a being that they've established that establishes hate for anybody else that's not like them. We have to be careful and watch out that we don't let that affect our love for others, because we are to love one another, and that means to love all men. So God made man in his own image, Genesis 1:26. We saw in 1 John 4:8 that God is love. Knowing this, then how should we live our lives? If we don't love our fellow man enough to show compassion, are we really exemplifying Christianity? Are we showing love to one another when we just amble along through life, not ever doing much? I know it's difficult sometimes. Darla and I were talking about knowing what's going on. Sometimes someone will say, yeah, this person did this and said this. And we're like, well, I didn't know that. Oh, everybody knew that. Well, we didn't know that. This is news to us. We didn't know. All the while, those people are saying, they don't even care. They didn't say a one word to us. They don't care about us. Well, honestly, we didn't know, so we couldn't. Well, it's your job. You need to make sure you know. Sometimes it's difficult to find out what's going on in people's lives or to hear what's going on in people's lives, and the buzz goes around the congregation or around the community, and everybody hears about it but you. Or it makes it difficult sometimes. It doesn't show a lack of love. It just shows a lack of communication throughout all the congregation sometimes. But if we don't show our love, if we don't love our fellow man enough to show compassion, then I don't believe that we can say we're exemplifying Christian behavior. But on the other hand, we have to also watch out that we don't accuse somebody of not being very loving just because they haven't said anything to us or because they didn't notice something that was going on. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 17. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 17, "But whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" You know, when I read a passage like this, and I've had this verse in sermons before. I did a sermon on giving one time, and this was the key verse. And I had to think, the last couple of vehicles I've had, I have one of those carpet, like a dash cover. It's made, it looks like carpet. It fits the dash perfectly. And up under that carpet, I had some $1 bills and sometimes a $5 bill. Usually it's if I need a bag of ice or something, I got a dollar bill to go in. Or if someone comes up to me and says, "Hey buddy, you got a couple of dollars?" "Yeah, I do. I have." And I got in the habit of doing that when I was living in Austin. I'd always have, you know, $8 or $10 stashed under there. They stayed good and crisp. They would go through machines well because they were under the sun, under that dash. When I look at this, "Whosoever has this world's good and sees his brother in need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion on him, how dwelleth the love of God in him?" And that made me think about when you see somebody on the side of the road and they're broke down and we don't stop to help. Well, I'm going to be late for work. I'm just not going to make it. If I don't have time to stop, or looks like that other guy's stopping there, I'll just go on along. Or what can I do? He looks more like a mechanic than me. I mean, you know, what can I do? And we draw these excuses as to why we don't stop. And I remember reading about a woman, or seeing a story about a woman who stopped to help somebody. And she stopped to help this elderly woman and then went on about her business. Well, one of the things that she was on her way to a job interview, and the guy said, the thing that I take most importantly is punctuality, and you showed up late, so we're not even going to have an interview. So she missed her job interview that she had been waiting for. And then turns out later on that she got hired by the guy who was the husband or friend or something of the woman she saved. She saved this lady's life or whatever. Sometimes we have to stop and slow down and use our opportunities to help somebody despite what it might do to our jobs. God commands us to love one another. He doesn't command us, "Keep your job no matter what." You know, don't make sure that you don't help other people. If it means losing your job, then don't do it. God's commands come first. And we have to be careful or watch out that we don't do this. We seem to have an unspoken competition about who can be the toughest or who can be the meanest person around. We have the "my dog's bigger than your dog" man mentality. When in reality, as Christians, we should be just the opposite. Sad to say, but even among our own Christian family, here and elsewhere among the brotherhood, there are those who stir up contention, those who stir up strife, refusing to love the brethren and accusing the church of being unloving. Sometimes we will reach out to someone in love. I really love this person. I want to teach them the truth. I want to show them what the gospel says. And then when we show them that, they say, "You're hateful. Why would you say something so hateful?" Really just repeating what the Bible says. I'm not trying to be hateful or unloving, and which is what we get accused of. Romans chapter 12, verse 10 tells us we should actually prefer one another. "Be ye kindly affectioned to one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another." Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10 tells us, "As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith." Sometimes it's difficult to come to worship when there's people that have strife or anger or issues against one another. I've seen it within the congregation. I've seen it within other congregations. I've seen it within the church abroad. where you have one person that will not talk to another person or will not come around because of another person being there. I just can't stand that person. Perhaps it's something they did outside the church or something they did, I don't know, took their parking place, whatever, who knows. But sometimes we have strife among us. We're commanded to be especially loving to those of the congregation. I know that this congregation reaches out. If y'all reach out and love one another as much as y'all have loved my wife and I, then this is a very loving congregation. Yet sometimes we fall short and we just go through. I know there are, as I mentioned, personality conflicts, but there are also personality clicks. So some personalities click. A lot of times I'll talk to Steve and I'll say, Steve, can you go talk to this person? Because I know y'all's personality really meshes well. And mine doesn't. I don't know what to say or don't know how to go about that. But it says here, as we therefore, again, Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, as we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Are we really doing this? And if not, it's more likely because it's not because we're unloving or uncaring, but simply because we're not making the effort. Like I mentioned this morning, you got to set a goal. You have to make the effort. You have to determine that's what you're going to do. We have to determine, I'm going to love this person. I've even mentioned before on a Wednesday night, there's a handful of people here on Wednesday night. And I say, why don't we all reach out to three people today that weren't here tonight? Reach out to three people tomorrow that weren't here tonight and just say, hey, we missed you. Think about all the people that are missing from our services. Our services got up to 120 average. We averaged 120. In 2009, we averaged 70. And we got all the way up to 120. Where are they? Well, some are sick, some are out, some have decided they're not coming back. Some have left this congregation and don't plan on coming back ever. They don't want to come back. They want to go, they went somewhere else and want to stay there. And that's their business. But here's the thing we need to do. Was it because we weren't showing love? Now, I had a brother tell me one time, he said, where's the love? Where's the love? Where's the love? Well, the love is not in doing things your way and not my way, or the love is not doing my things my way and not your way. The love is doing things God's way, and that's what we have to prefer. So if we don't make the effort to show our love, then in essence, we're hiding it. Jesus said that by our love for one another, all men will know that we are his disciples, John chapter 13 and verse 35. I think the opposite is true. By a lack of love, people will know that we're not Jesus' disciples. If we're not showing love, then they're going to think, well, that's not a disciple of Christ, because that's a very unloving person. For a lack of love for another, people will be able to see that we're not his disciples. John chapter 15, verses 12 and 13. John chapter 15, verses 12 and 13. Jesus says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ephesians 5:2 tells us that we are to walk in love. Ephesians 5:2 says, and walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us and hath given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor. Have we mastered the art of loving our fellow man, or have we forgotten the art of loving our fellow man? Have we forgotten the command altogether? The Thessalonians were told that they were loving to the Macedonians, but needed to continue to grow. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 9 and 10. But as touching brotherly love, you need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another. And indeed, you do it toward all the brethren which are at Macedonia. But we beseech you, brethren, that ye increase the more and more. Right here in Italia, we have a very strong congregation, but I beseech you, brethren, that you increase the more and more. I look at this passage and I think, where do I need to grow? I think I need to grow in this respect. I grew up in a family where everybody was out for his own, not in a selfish way, but we just had a big family and we just had a lot going on. And so my mom's attitude was, if you don't get it, then it's your own fault. If you don't eat, you go hungry, you leave this house hungry, it's your fault because the food is here, but we're not going to spoon feed you. So that being said, growing up, sometimes we find ourselves singled out as our own, you know, we set ourselves aside or we recluse a little bit. How is it that we need to become more open and outward to other people? we can do this, and this is something that we'll look at as we move through. Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Philippians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, Paul encourages the brethren to be more like Christ. If there be therefore any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any bowels or mercies, fulfill ye my joy that ye be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. It never ceases to amaze me that there are people who rally for the freedom to commit murder in the name of pro-choice, and then have the audacity to call us haters for being pro-life. These are the same people that believe in population control and believe that population control begins with the unborn and the aged. And that's a scary, scary thought when you consider what the Bible has to say about the little ones and the aged ones. It is hard when hearing the hate and profanity that these godless people spew forth to believe that there are still people in the world that have love one towards another. We have the tendency to think that we must be the only ones that have this doctrine, love one another, because apparently you're not seeing it in other places. Well, there should be love for one another in the world, whether it's for those who are several weeks away from conception or whether those are 100 years old. As Christians, we must shine forth as beacons in a dark and dreadful world. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. How do you feel about a stranger coming up to you and speaking to you? If you've ever met my mother, you know what the kind of person that she is. My mother does not know a stranger. She called me it's been a year or so ago, and she said, I ran into somebody that you used to know. And I said, really? She said, yeah, and I gave him your number. His name was Dennis Mudd. I met Dennis Mudd when I was 12 years old at a camp, a youth camp. And I came home and I told my parents, I said, I met some other kids from Yoakum, Texas, where Grandma lives. Fast forward 45 years, and my mom's standing at the grocery store talking to this guy, and his name is Dennis Mudd, and she goes, I know that name. Started up a conversation with him, gives him my phone number. You need to call my son. He knew you from a kid. She doesn't know a stranger. And sometimes we look at that and we think, okay, Mom, knock yourself out. Sometimes I envy that. That she can show that kind of openness. She can open up to anyone and just speak to anyone like if she's known them her whole life. And right away, they don't get off and say, who are you talking to me? They just open up and start talking to her. She can just talk to anyone, anytime. When you meet a stranger on the street, do you say as little as possible and just go on about your business? I want to talk to this person. Oh gosh, who's this freak coming up to us now? Someone coming walking toward you. Oh, act like we don't see him. Let's just keep on moving. That's not why God put us here. He looks down and he sees his creation and they're ignoring one another. I don't think that's the way God wanted us to be. How can we ever save the lost or take the gospel to the lost if we can't even strike up a conversation with the lost? I came across a story and I thought, I know I've used this story in a sermon in the past, but I found it in my notes and I thought this is really interesting. And there was a video where they set up one of those deals, you know, the kids jump in the little play thing and it's got all the balls and they jump in and they play around with those. And they had this thing set up and this plexiglass box full of these balls, and they had a stairway going up to the top and the sign that said, step in, have a seat, make a friend. And then they had a camera on it. And two people who were total strangers would climb in, and while they were there, they found that some of the balls were larger than others, and the bigger ones had messages on them, like find something in common with the other person, or share something personal with this person next to you. And they're like, this is awkward. Okay, I wish I'd have never got in here, right? In order to find something in common, they would have to share something personal, or they'd follow the rules or the instructions on these balls, and they finally find themselves laughing as though they had been friends forever. And then something would be said, and they would realize that they had found some common ground, and they would start talking about things. They were asked to create a special handshake, or they would ask to give a nickname or whatever. But eventually they would go their separate ways, and many of these peoples were generations apart. Many of them were of the opposite sex. Many of them were the same. Some were women and women. Some were men and men. Some were men and women. Some were kids and adults. Some, you know, and various, just anybody, whoever just happened to be in there. But they would strike up these conversations, and they would often end laughing, hugging, taking pictures to remember this experience of the day they made a friend out of a stranger. I don't know whose idea it was to put this camera on and to see people's reaction, but it was brilliant. What it does is it forces people together. I can remember one time we went to and I've probably mentioned this before, but we went to a youth devotional in, I can't even remember where it was, Floresville or somewhere. And the guy said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a number, and I want you to remember your number. We had a bunch of kids there. We had about 14 kids from this congregation there, and we were all sitting there. He says, I'm going to give you all a number. You got to remember your number, because when I tell you to stand up, I tell number whatever to stand up, I want you all to stand up. So he goes through, and he goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, and he goes through everybody, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and he goes through. He goes, all the ones, stand up. I want you all right here. All the twos, I want you right here. All the threes, I want you back there. All the fours, I want you back there. That's going to be your group for the rest of the day. All of these kids thought this was awkward. Why? Because I want to hang out with my friends that I came with. We even had guests that rode with us. Our group here invited some of their friends, and they just got separated from their friend. You think that's awkward? They're not even members of the church, and they're unfamiliar ground, and now they're being put with some strangers. They got to talking to one another, and he played some little games and some get-to-know-each-other games. They had to come up with something, write something, and guess who wrote that. I was born in Hawaii, I think one of the kids. Nobody here born in Hawaii. But afterwards, when they gave them an opportunity to come back together, they stayed with their groups. They enjoyed being with those groups. They made new friends they never would have made if he hadn't separated them and forced them into a situation where they had to make friends. Is that the way we are as adults? I'm never going to make any new friends unless someone forces me into that. Is that really showing the love that God tells us to love one another? How do we love one another? No, I'm up to here with friends. I got plenty of friends. I've had enough. I don't need any more. Stay away from me. Right? Is that the attitude we have? If it is, then we shouldn't have that attitude. We shouldn't. I use this illustration to show that it's not impossible to show love towards our fellow man without any ulterior motives. There are places like New York where people are notoriously cold and intolerant of others. Why are they that way? Have they always been that way? If you back up, they haven't always been that way. Now you may say, well, as far as I've ever heard, New York has always been like that. No, they're humans, and they were created in the image of God. So we know that if you go back far enough, you'll find a time when they weren't like that. Something happened along the way that this group of people got to where they're too busy to talk to somebody. You ever see one of those movies where somebody's in New York and they're from Texas? And they're like, hey, buddy, how's it going? They just, wait, man, everybody's so rude here. They won't even talk to you. They won't even say hello to you. Nobody will talk. Believe it or not, we're all headed to that. If you back up in Texas, back up several years, we were a lot more open than we are now. Back up some more, they were a lot more open than that then. It just, you know, I'm not saying we should just walk up to total strangers and try to be friends with them, although I believe it would probably do us good. I'm just saying that we need to have more in common with those around us. Otherwise, we'll never be able to teach the gospel to the lost. You never know what kind of doors you might open by striking up a conversation with someone. Acts chapter 10, verse 38, Jesus went about doing good. Jesus went about doing good. I don't see how we could go wrong if we did the same. If we follow the example of Christ, we can't help but make new friends wherever we go, and the love of Christ will shine forth in our lives. If we can't even get along with our own family members, how can we say that the love of God dwells within us? Well, I just don't get along with them too well. And I understand there are certain issues. Like if you have this issue, well, my family refuses to believe in God. And so we don't get along. That's one thing that's understandable. But if you just can't get along with your family, how are we going to get along with others? Difficult, hard to say that the love of God dwells in us. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 through 8. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1 through 8. Paul says here, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith, so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And if I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and if I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profiteth me nothing. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not its own, is not provoked, taketh not account of evil, rejoiceth not in unrighteousness, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never faileth. But whether there be prophecies, they shall be done away. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall be done away. I read a story of a man who had he had helped another man financially. It was in an illustration book. He had helped this other man financially quite a bit. He had given him a lot of money over the years, helped him financially, and when he no longer could help him and stopped helping him financially, the man went out publicly and slandered him and just raked him over the coals. So the first man sat down and he wrote a scathing letter, and he came out with exactly what to say, and he wrote it all down and he read it again. And the first time he read it, it sounded great. And the second time he read it, it didn't sound so great. The third time he read it, he wasn't so sure he should send it. So he presented it to his superiors for advice. And he says, this is what everyone knew, that he had been slandered by this guy. And so he gives this letter. He says, this is the letter that I wrote. You tell me what you think. And so he submitted the evidence, the letter to them. And their response was, not redemptive enough. And he thought for a second, and he tore up the letter, and he threw it in the trash. He never said another word about it. And a few weeks later, the man issued a public apology for slandering him. The writer of this story, I don't know who it was that didn't give the credit for this writing, but the writer of this story brings out this point. When the self is unsurrendered, it tends to be touchy, easily provoked, unable to bear insults. When the self is surrendered to Christ and the love of Jesus fills and cleanses the self, then we can bear all things, endure all things, and men and women are impacted by our lives. The story meant nothing to me. I got nothing out of the story, but that little paragraph right there was profound. Have we really surrendered ourselves to God? And if not, then maybe that's why we're touchy. Maybe that's why we're easily provoked and unable to bear insults. Charlie and I go at each other all the time. We go back and forth, back and forth. In fact, I was going to say something when I got up here. I was going to say, well, I can't get the thought of Charlie with that mask on, full of his runny nose. And I thought, you know, I haven't really been around Charlie a whole lot. I miss him so much. I don't want to say nothing about it. I don't want to start off by picking on him his first day back here. But we go back and forth at each other, and those insults don't mean anything. It just like water off a duck's back, and we laugh at each other, and we laugh with each other. And why? Because we love each other. And that love shows in the way that I can take anything he can throw at me. It don't matter how, and sometimes you might say, I upset you with that. No, not even in the least. Not a bit. Why? Because we love one another. And when you have that kind of love that God tells you to love one another with, you can bear all things. And you can endure all things. And you can take anything that's thrown at you. Jesus commanded us to love one another. We've already shown that we're a congregation and that can be a very loving group. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, John 3:16. What an awesome God we serve, and let us show it by showing love for our fellow man. If the things that others do and say make you want to lash out at them, and remember, love beareth all things, and perhaps maybe it is time that we examine ourselves to see if we have that kind of love that Jesus commands. If you have not been as loving as you feel God wants you to be today, why not make the change tonight while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected?